A Manila court junks government's case seeking to declare the CPP-NPA a terrorist organization. The framer of the 1987 Constitution rejects the proposal to give back the sole power of declaring martial law to the president. Environmentalist Greta Thunberg slams President Marcos for saying there can be no climate justice under his administration. And hundreds detained in Russia for staging anti-war protests. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, the Philippine government's anti-insurgency campaign, well, that hit a snag. That's after a Manila court junked government's attempt to have the Communist Party of the Philippines and the New People's Army declared as terrorists. Mike Navalio now joins us with details. Mike?
Hi, Carmina. A Manila court has junked the Philippine government's petition to declare the Communist Party of the Philippines and the New People's Army as terrorist organizations, making clear that rebellion and political acts are not acts of terrorism. In a 135-page resolution, Manila Regional Trial Court Branch 19 Judge Marlo Magdoza Malagar said the CPP-NPA was not organized for the purpose of engaging in terrorism. Armed struggle, he said, is only a means to achieve the CPP's purpose and is not the purpose of the creation of the CPP. After examining the constitution and key documents of the CPP-NPA, the Philippine government filed a proscription case against the two rebel groups in 2018 under the provisions of the Human Security Act of 2007. Which was eventually repealed by the Anti-Terrorism Act of 2020. A proscription case seeks a court ruling declaring as terrorist an organization, association, or group of persons organized to engage in terrorism, or which actually uses the acts to terrorize or to sow and create a condition of widespread and extraordinary fear and panic among the populace to coerce the government to give in to an unlawful demand. The case is filed by the Department of Justice with the Regional Trial Court under the Human Security Act and with the Court of Appeals under the Anti-Terrorism Act. In seeking to declare the CPP-NPA as terrorist groups, the DOJ cited 9 incidents of killings, attempted killings, and abduction from 2019 to 2020 in different areas in Mindanao. The Manila court said that while the 9 incidents it examined can be considered terrorism under the Human Security Act, their authorship could not be traced to the CPP-NPA. Eyewitnesses have only identified the perpetrators through their manner of clothing, wearing an all-black ensemble, which the court said is not enough to determine membership in the rebel groups. According to the court, no evidence was presented by those claiming to be former members of the NPA that there is an official party directive to commit the atrocities or that these were official acts of the CPP-NPA. It pointed out that none of the 9 incidents the Philippine government cited caused widespread and extraordinary fear and panic among the Philippine populace, but only pocket and sporadic occurrences in limited and scattered areas in the country, which could be considered guerrilla warfare, which is not synonymous with terrorism. The court said the government has also not shown that the 9 incidents were meant to coerce the government to give in to a demand as required under the Human Security Act. The court rejected other evidence presented by the government. The purging incidents, it said, were carried out in secrecy, which precluded the likelihood of widespread and extraordinary fear and panic among the populace. The court made clear incidents such as collection of revolutionary taxes, the 1971 Plaza Miranda bombing, which took place before the Human Security Act was passed into law, could not be used against the CPP-NPA in the proscription case. Judge Magdoza Malagar said the acts attributed to CPP-NPA can be considered political crimes, which are treated with leniency compared to the regular crimes under the revised penal code. He went on, in fact, to warn the government against red tagging and also said that to address rebellion, the government must look at addressing the social ills. He said the CPP can only gain adherence for as long as the government remains insensitive to and incompetent in addressing the social realities of poverty and material inequality, which bring with them the oppression of the marginalized. Reacting to the ruling, Bayan Secretary General Renato Reyes Jr. said, terrorist labeling will not end armed conflict. The key takeaway, he said, in the ruling is to junk terrorist labeling versus the CPP-NPA, and in that the government should abandon the policy of terrorist labeling and instead apply the framework of international humanitarian law to the armed conflict in the Philippines. Carmina?
All right, 2 things, Mike. First off, The decision was very clear. Means is not synonymous with purpose that was part of the decision of the Manila court. Now, question is, can government now still revive their bid to have the CPP-NPA tagged as a terrorist organization even after this ruling?
Camila, yes, they can still refile this, assuming they have new allegations, they have new basis, new incidents, because the definition of terrorism under the Anti-Terrorism Act is different. In fact, that's the point made by some of the petitioners before the Supreme Court. It's wider now. The definition of terrorism is wider under the Anti-Terrorism Act, which could encompass acts which does not sow terror or panic in the population. So that's one of the things that we're going to look into, whether the government will refile this and what would be the basis, Carmina.
And the next question there, Mike, is will this be enough of a basis now for, because we're talking about a different administration now. This was filed during the last administration. Can this administration now sort of use this as a basis for the resumption of the peace talks?
Well, it depends really on the priority of the administration, Carmina. But yes, the ruling did say that in order to address the root of rebellion, you have to look at the social ills instead of trying to ban them or prescribe them. It remains to be seen if the government will listen to that, Carmina. And we are still asking for the reaction from the Department of Justice, if they will seek a reconsideration of this case or they will rather file a new case under the Anti-Terrorism Act where they could have better chances of getting a prescription. Carmina?
Mike Navalio there. Thanks. And back here in the newsroom, for former Senator Panfilo Lacson, the court's move should not be interpreted as a setback for the anti-terror law. He says, as author and sponsor of the measure, he made that proscription will be the exclusive authority of the judiciary, since it could involve possible detention of individuals and groups suspected of violating the law. For Senator Ronald De La Rosa, it's time for government to end the peace talks and to finish off the communist rebels. During a Senate hearing this past Tuesday, the former police chief said the CPP-NPA has not been sincere in seeking peace. De La Rosa instead accused the communist group of regrouping and rearming its members. He added the country will only flourish once government ends the insurgency problem. In other news, the former defense minister who designed and implemented the martial law regime of the late Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr. wants to remove the constitutional safeguards meant to prevent a repeat of this dark chapter in the country's history. Juan Ponce Enrile, who is now the chief legal advisor of Marcos's son, President Marcos Jr., made the suggestion on the 50th anniversary of the Martial Law Declaration. Enrile told the Senate Committee on Constitutional Amendments the chief executive should have absolute authority to declare martial law. He also suggests using the 1935 Constitution as a pattern in making a new charter.
Dineklara namin yung martial law, simple lang. The Supreme Court cannot interfere. Nobody can interfere. The power of the President was absolute. Nasabi ng 1935 Constitution at 1973 Constitution, pag nakita mo na at natitsak mo sa sarili mong desisyon ng bansa mo ay namimiligro, nasasalakayin, o wawasakin ng insurrecto o ng rebellion, gumalaw ka na, gamitin mo ang kamay na bakal.
Kundi ako nagkakamali.
Senate Minority Leader Coco Pimentel, son of former Senate President and martial law victim Aquilino Pimentel Jr., is against Enrile's idea.
Kasi ang basa ko ron ang feeling ni President Marcos siguro only he could save the country, and that cannot be true. There would have been others who would have saved the Republic of the Philippines, and then we would have followed the Constitution. We would have also respected the will of the people, kung who is that new leader that they wanted to elect in the scheduled election.
Enrile also suggested doubling the current number of senators from 24 to 48 with an election that will be held every 2 years. He believes this will ensure the stability of the country. Enrile also defended the declaration of martial law in 1972 despite documented abuses and human rights violations during that period. Senator Robin Hood Padilla, who chairs the Senate Committee on Constitutional Amendments, agrees, saying it did more good than harm.
Hindi po nila makita yung wisdom nung pagkakatatag noong martial law noon na nagsagip sa ating kalayaan.
Dahil hindi kami madadaldal. Quiet lang kami noon. Akala nila mandando na sila na ang hari. Pinabayaan lang namin. Kaya nung isang gabi nag-operate kami, sinarhan namin ang buong Pilipinas. Kinontrol ko ang komunikasyon, pati yung cable, lahat ng television station sinequester ko.
One of the framers of the 1987 Constitution is also against Enrile's proposal to give back the sole power of declaring martial law to the sitting president. Attorney Christian Monsod says they put checks and balances in the existing charter to avoid repeating the mistakes of the past.
The president can proclaim martial law for 60 days by himself first. Kasi nga, emergency yun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the one who put that there. Give him the immediate powers in a real emergency. Pero meron ding participation ang Congress and may participation ang Supreme Court. Kung nakikita nila na mali yung ginawa ng presidente, it will under false assumptions and premises.
Mm-hmm.
Yun ang differential now in 1935 Constitution. And we should learn yung lessons of the past on what happened when you put absolute power in the hands of one person. That cannot happen in a democracy.
Enrile had also wanted the imminent danger provision to be restored as a constitutional ground to declare martial law, but Monsod explains why they omitted it.
And then yung imminent danger thereof at saka lawless violence, because yung interpretation ng imminent danger and lawless violence is an issue by itself. Imminent danger thereof is a very elastic term that can be misused and abused by a president that is greedy for power.
For a constitutionalist, martial law should have no place in a democracy. Attorney Tony Lavina says it was a wrong move to give a president martial law power since it was a measure used to oppress Filipinos when the country was colonized by the U.S. and Spain.
Martial law is what's called a colonial power. It is not needed by a society. It is not needed by a democracy. Kaya yun ang para sa akin, malaking pagkakamali ng 1987 Constitution. Tayo meron tayong martial law not because the president of the U.S. or a president should have martial law, but an oppressive colonial master. Mm-hmm. And sinasabi ni Senator Enrile, balik na lang tayo sa 1935 Constitution. That is crazy. The 1935 Constitution was an American Constitution. 1935, hindi pa tayo independent.
Yeah.
Diba? Mm-hmm. Filipinos drafted it, but they have to make sure to please the Americans.
President Marcos unlikely to declare martial law like his father. That's according to former Commission on Human Rights chairperson and martial law survivor, Eta Rosales. She believes the late dictator's son is out to prove their critics wrong and rectify their family's image.
I don't think he wants to declare martial law because precisely they're doing their darndest best to prove that they are nice people and then hindi sila mga kwan. They did not commit atrocities. This is possible. He would rather that they do not commit martial law. But if push turns to shove at mapipilitan, it will always be that way.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, environmentalist Getatende blast President Marcos over climate justice. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we're back. Here's still the Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at the headlines this noon. A Manila court junks government's case seeking to declare the CPP-NPA a terrorist organization. A framer of the 1987 Constitution rejects a proposal to give back the sole power of declaring martial law to the president. Environmentalist Getatende slams President Marcos, saying there can be no climate justice under his administration. And hundreds detained in Russia for staging anti-war protests. Back with more news, President Marcos meets with United Nations Chief Antonio Guterres and other world leaders on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York. The UN says Marcos and Guterres discussed areas of cooperation and exchanged views on international issues and climate action initiatives. The Philippine leader also met with Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. The palace said Prime Minister Kishida reiterated Japan's commitment to supporting the Philippines' economic development to become an upper-middle-income country. Marcos also met with former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, who heads a nonprofit group that supports globalization efforts of governments. They discussed the peace process in the Bangsamoro region and explored concrete ways to address other priority issues, including food security and climate action. The palace has also confirmed the chief executive will meet with U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday. Marcos also met with executives of American Global Food Corporation Cargill during his working visit to the U.S. Marcos said they discussed ways to attain food security and boost agricultural productivity in the Philippines. The president also met with officials of the World Bank, including its president, David Malpass. Marcos was joined by Socio-Economic Planning Secretary Arsenio Balisacan, Finance Chief Benjamin Tiokno, Central Bank Governor Felipe Medalla, and House Speaker Martin Romualdez. Malacañang has yet to release further details about those meetings. Well, President Marcos also met with the U.S. ASEAN Business Council and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in a business dialogue in New York. There, he again conveyed the priorities of the Philippines, which includes improving bilateral economic ties with other countries.
We really have to leverage whatever assets, whatever capabilities, whatever we have, so that we can maximize our ability to grow and to pull the economy. Let us find new ways. Let us find new ways to partner. Let us find new ways to develop. Let us find new ways to strengthen this relationship between the United States, ASEAN, and the Philippines.
There can be no climate justice under Marcos. Those strong words coming from climate activist Getatende in a video message during an event commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Martial Law Declaration at the University of the Philippines in Diliman. Appearing alongside other young activists, Tunbe said, climate justice cannot be attained under fascist leaders. Her statement comes after President Marcos urged developed economies to do more to fight climate change at the UN General Assembly. Meanwhile, a Filipino climate activist says it is crucial for President Marcos to take his commitment in taking climate action seriously. Marinette Ubaldo stressed, experts have already warned humanity has less than a decade to take urgent action to address the climate crisis before reaching a point of no return. She also hopes the chief executive will help in protecting climate activists.
So I just hope that as a climate activist, our president will be with us, will protect climate activists, will protect political activists, and be with us in pushing for loss and damage, for climate justice, and prioritize more proactive mitigation and adaptation measures. There is no climate justice when human rights are violated, because these are all interlinked. And when we say climate justice, we're actually talking about our right to a safe space, to our right to our opinions, our right to express ourselves, which is actually being threatened now by this administration.
State Weather Bureau pag-asa lauds President Marcos for highlighting climate change in a speech before the UN General Assembly. Pag-asa hopes this would lead to more funding for projects aimed at mitigating climate change. It warns failing to address the issue would result in more destructive natural disasters.
Nakikita po natin na meron pong ginawang tinatawag na climate projections ng pag-asa. Tiningnan natin ano pwedeng mangyari in 2050. Ilang years na lang ngayon yon? 30 years and almost 28 years. And yung susunod po, yung at the end of the 21st century. So nakita po natin na tataas ang temperatura ng bansa ng about 4 degrees centigrade at the end of the 21st century. At yung pong bagyo, nakikita natin yung intensity ng bagyo ay patuloy na tataas. Natutuwa po ang pag-asa that yung issue ng climate change ay talagang binigyang halaga ng ating Pangulo. So ang climate change po ay talagang napaka-importante ngayon na malagay sa planning process ng ating mga gobyerno. And actually po, ay ito naman po ay naumpisahan na in the last 10 years at dapat pag-ibayuhin po natin na ito ay malagay sa fully integrated in the planning process at sa budgeting system para po mapondohan at magawan ng mga programa na makakatulong sa ating mga mamamayan.
The Philippine Environment Chief pushes for a whole-of-society approach to mitigate disasters and climate risks in the country. Secretary Tony Yulo Loizaga, a climate and resilience expert, says aside from government agencies working together, stakeholders must also be involved in building more resilient communities. Loizaga is leading the Philippine delegation to the United Nations Regional Summit on Disaster Risk Reduction in Australia.
There's a lot of work to be done. The work is transdisciplinary. We cannot go home thinking that our work is to be done in silos. But vulnerability is here today. Exposure is here today. So adaptation needs to happen today and not tomorrow or later.
Moving on, the Philippine Health Department sees the reopening of face-to-face classes as one of the reasons for the recent uptick in COVID cases. That's why it urges parents to keep their children masked up despite looser policies. Rafael Bosano reports.
Parents and children usually crowd schools after every weekday. Some parents say they are not taking chances and continue to wear face masks despite it being optional for outdoor settings.
Ay, siyempre natatakot pa rin, di ba? Kaya, pero nasa pag-iingat pa rin talaga ng mga magulang kung paano nila i-handle ang mga gayon mga sitwasyon na gayon. Hindi pa rin siguro namin tatanggalin ng face mask.
Some parents also take time to instill the importance of taking care of oneself in their kids, especially in the middle of a raging pandemic.
Talagang bubugbugin mo sa pangaral. Check mo yung kanyang health kits, katulad ng sanitizer, alcohol kit, yung panyong ginagamit niya. Kailangan niyang time to time, pag mula umalis ng umaga, kailangan pagdating ng hapon, matcheck mo kung ito ba'y nabawasan or nadumihan yung panyo. Kailangan laging malinis. Hindi po pwede, yung face mask niya, kung kinakailangan dalawang beses magpalit itong maghapon, mas maigi, mas mainam.
In Pinaglabanan Elementary School in San Juan City, not a case of COVID-19 among its students and faculty has been logged. But the school administration admits there are some students who show symptoms after arriving to class.
Kami naman, kapag po sa aming observation at or assessment at nakita ng aming teacher yan, ay agad namin ina-isolate yan at inoobserbahan. At ina-advise namin ng magulang na obserbahan din kung patuloy or kung lumalala yung mga sintomas or nagpapakita pa ng ibang sintomas, ay mabuti ng magpa-test.
The Philippine Health Department has earlier said that the rise in new cases being observed in some areas no longer come as a surprise.
The pattern of mobility here in the Philippines have increased. Nakasabay din siguro nito yung pagbubukas ng ibang sektor katulad ng edukasyon. Once mobility increases, we expect that there is more interaction between and among people. Kaya po, kapag mas maraming interaction, mas posible ang transmisyon ng sakit.
This is why experts continue to advise the public to continue wearing face masks even when outdoors.
Para sigurado, mag-mask na lang kayo all the time. Kahit hindi, ito ay optional na lang sa outdoor sapagkat nandiyan pa rin ang COVID, hindi pa natatapos ang pandemya.
Aside from getting children aged 5 years and above vaccinated, teachers and health experts are one in advising parents not to send their children to school if they show any signs of illness. Instead, they should observe their children and consult a physician. Rafael Bosano, ABS-CBN News.
Bohol no longer requiring vaccination cards as a requirement to enter the province. Our very own Annie Perez on the line now with details. Annie, what more can you tell us?
Yes, that's right, Carmina. The province of Bohol is now accepting inbound travelers without a vaccination card. This was confirmed by Bohol Governor Aris Omentado, who signed a new executive order yesterday and released the order to the public today that he is lifting the requirement of presenting a vaccination card or a certificate of vaccination before one can enter the province. Omentado believes that with the ongoing mass vaccination program of the national government and the LGUs, he has observed that the number of COVID-19 cases, not just in Bohol, but even in other parts of the country, has already gone down, and that therefore he says that there is no need to longer require inbound travelers to present these proof of vaccination. However, if the inbound travelers are experiencing symptoms of COVID-19, they shall be required to present their vaccination card but will still be allowed entry. If the vaccination card is not available, LGU personnel and some of their health officials will approach these travelers so that they can ask for their personal information, log them down just for the purposes of contact tracing, but still, they will be allowed entry to the province. Omentado explained that this move is his way to stimulate the local economy in an attempt to recover it, especially that Bohol, as a very tourism-reliant province, was severely affected during the height of the pandemic. And based on the statistics that we got from the Department of Health COVID-19 tracker, Bohol currently has only 150 active cases. 26,000 have been infected since the start of the pandemic, and 25,000 have recovered. And that's the latest from Central Visayas, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Annie. Annie Perez there joining us on the line. Take care and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, health workers once again holding demonstration to protest delays in the release of the pandemic allowance and other benefits. Our very own Raya Capullo now joins us with that story. Raya.
Carmina, health workers staged a rally in front of the Department of Health Central Office in Manila on Tuesday to protest over their still unreleased COVID-19 benefits. Led by the Alliance of Filipino Workers, Sentro ng Mga Nagkakaisa at Progresibong Manggagawa, health workers held placards as they demanded the government to release their COVID-19 benefits as well as the increase in their pay. The protesters slammed the DOH for its failure to fully release their benefits, such as one COVID allowance, special risk allowance, and meals, accommodation, and transportation benefits. They also decried the lack of budget in the country's healthcare system. The protesters then challenged the administration and the DOH to show their genuine concern for the health workers by responding to their appeal on unreleased COVID-19 benefits. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Raya Capullo. And back here in the newsroom, we're going to take a quick break. Still ahead, panic and anger across Russia after Vladimir Putin ordered the mobilization of military reservists. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back at World News, hundreds have been arrested in anti-war protests across the country. Russian human rights group OVD Info said at least 1,300 people have been detained at rallies in 38 different cities. This came after President Vladimir Putin's announcement of a partial mobilization of civilians to fight in Ukraine. The Defense Ministry said Russia would initially deploy some 300,000 reservists. Flights out of Russia were immediately sold out in an apparent exodus. U.S. President Joe Biden tears into Vladimir Putin's decision to call up his country's military reservists. In his address at the United Nations General Assembly, Biden accused Putin of shamelessly violating the UN Charter and castigated him over a veiled threat to use nuclear weapons. Biden also announced additional funding to strengthen global food security disrupted by Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Today I'm announcing another $2.9 billion in U.S. support for life-saving humanitarian and food security assistance for this year alone. Russia, in the meantime, is pumping out lies, trying to pin the blame for the crisis, the food crisis, on the sanctions imposed by many in the world for the aggression against Ukraine. So let me be perfectly clear about something. Our sanctions explicitly allow Russia the ability to export food and fertilizer. No limitation. It's Russia's war that is worsening food insecurity, and only Russia can end it.
Putin's call to mobilize up to 300,000 reservists comes as Moscow-held regions of Ukraine prepare to hold annexation referendums this week. Putin also warned Russia will do everything to protect itself from those he claims are blackmailing the country with nuclear weapons. Putin said his words are not a bluff. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky calls for punishment against Russia as he addressed the UN General Assembly in a pre-recorded video message. The Ukrainian leader called on the UN to strip Russia of its veto power on the Security Council. He also called for the creation of a special war tribunal to investigate war crimes by Russia. Zelensky's message was met with a standing ovation in the hall.
Crime has been committed against Ukraine, and we demand just punishment. The crime was committed against our state borders. The crime was committed against the lives of our people. Special tribunal should be created to punish Russia for the crime of aggression against our state. This will become signal to all would-be aggressors that they must value peace or be brought to responsibility by the world.
Meanwhile, the Ukrainian government announced the exchange of a record high 215 prisoners with Russia. The prisoners of war freed from Moscow included fighters who led the defense of the Azovstal steel plant in Mariupol, which became an icon of Ukrainian resistance. Volodymyr Zelensky said the prisoners will remain in Turkey until the end of the war for security reasons. In return, Moscow received 55 prisoners, including Viktor Medvedchuk. He's a former Ukrainian lawmaker and an ally of President Putin. This is the biggest prisoner swap between the two nations since the start of Russia's invasion in February. U.S. President Joe Biden says the U.S. is not seeking a Cold War with China. According to Biden, the U.S. is only promoting its vision of a free, open, and prosperous world. He also stresses Washington will not call on countries to choose between the U.S. and other partners.
Let me be direct about the competition between the United States and China. As we manage shifting geopolitical trends, the United States will conduct itself as a reasonable leader. We do not seek conflict. We do not seek a Cold War. We do not ask any nation to choose between the United States or any other partner.
Biden's statement comes amid heightened tensions with China following the visits of several U.S. lawmakers to Taiwan. Hurricane Fiona strengthens to a powerful Category 4 storm as it heads toward Bermuda. The storm gathered strength as it swept the Caribbean Sea. Fiona left a trail of death and destruction in Puerto Rico. Officials there say the death toll from the storm has climbed to 8. The White House said U.S. President Joe Biden has approved a disaster declaration for Puerto Rico, which makes federal funding available for individuals affected by the storm. After Bermuda, Fiona is expected to reach Canada's Atlantic coast and the U.S. East Coast on Friday. Here at home, tropical depression Karding expected to bring heavy rains to northern and central Luzon over the weekend. ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas now joins us. For more on that, Ariel, over to you.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. The low-pressure area east of Luzon developed into tropical depression Karding. It is the 11th cyclone inside the Philippine area of responsibility this year. At 10 a.m., it was located 1,370 kilometers east of northern Luzon, packing winds of 45 kilometers per hour and with gusts up to 55 kilometers per hour. It is moving eastward at 10 kilometers per hour. For now, it has no direct effect on the country's weather. Karding will continue to move eastward before turning and heading west tomorrow, ahead of the landfall in Cagayan Valley Sunday evening or Monday early morning. Pagasa said it may hoist tropical cyclone wind signal number 1 in some localities of northern Luzon as early as Friday evening or Saturday morning. Beginning late Saturday, northern and central Luzon will experience heavy rains that may trigger isolated to scattered flooding and rain-induced landslides. But today, the southwest monsoon or habagat will still bring rains over Mimaropa, Bicol region, western Visayas, and Samar Island. Intense thunderstorms will also affect Ilocos region, Cordillera, Cagayan Valley, and central Luzon this afternoon. And here in Metro Manila, the skies will be mostly overcast with short sunny breaks and thunderstorm this afternoon or evening. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel. Now, back here in the newsroom, for the third straight time, the U.S. Federal hiked interest rates by 75 basis points as it tries to bring down high inflation. It's also projecting a more aggressive path ahead. Policymakers are expecting to raise borrowing costs to 4.4% by the end of year 2022. This suggests another supersized hike is in the cards this year. The Fed also warns against reversing course too soon, asserting there is no painless way to regain control of inflation.
Restoring price stability is essential to set the stage for achieving maximum employment and stable prices over the longer run. We will keep at it until we're confident the job is done. Restoring price stability will likely require maintaining a restrictive policy stance for some time. The historical record cautions strongly against prematurely loosening policy.
Fed Chairman Jerome Powell also acknowledging rate hikes are indeed triggering a slowdown in the U.S. economy.
There's a very high likelihood that we'll have a period of what I've mentioned is below trend growth, by which I mean much lower growth, and we're seeing that now.
Policymakers see rates in the U.S. climbing to 4.6% by the end of 2023, up from a 3.8% estimate in June. They also expect to begin cutting rates in 2024, but will do so slowly. The Philippine Trade Department advises consumers to shop early for the holiday season as prices of various Noche Buena products have noticeably increased. Trade Undersecretary Ruth Castelo says they cannot put a price cap on Noche Buena items because those products do not have approved suggested retail prices. Stephen Kua of the Philippine Amalgamated Supermarkets Association, meanwhile, says consumers can expect prices to go even higher as December draws near.
Ang mga senyales are showing na mukhang gagalaw pa or hindi na bababa or wala nang ano, walang masyadong release na on its way. No? So, kumbaga, it would be good to plan ahead. Pag maghintay ka ng bonus, sabay-sabay lumabas, eh, sabay-sabay din ang taas ng bilis, pag sabay-sabay din ang taas ng demand, di ba? Kaya kung meron kang naitabi ng kaunti for your savings, maybe can use it now, no? And then ibalik mo na lang. Ibalik mo na lang yung savings mo later on. Once ang increase kang price sa supermarket items, di buong babayan, hindi katulad ng gasolina.
And going back to our top story, a Manila court has junked government's attempt to have the Communist Party of the Philippines and the New People's Army declared as terrorists. Joining us now for a reaction is the executive director of the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict, retired Lieutenant General Emmanuel Salama. General, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to the show.
Yeah, good afternoon to everyone and those who are listening to this program.
Okay, first off, I want to get your reaction to the Manila court junking the CPP-NPA's label as a terrorist organization. In her ruling, Judge Marlo Magdosa Malgar said the CPP-NPA was not organized for the purpose of engaging in terrorism. What is your reaction to that?
Well, they have the right to do that, but still the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict still sustain its previous on record that even the international community made a strong stand against the Communist Party of the Philippines as a foreign terrorist organization. That's the funny part. We are here in the Philippines is telling that the CCPNPA is not a terrorist organization, while in fact the other organization, international community, has already made a strong statement on and even position that they are a terrorist group. Mm-hmm.
And be that as it may, the judge, Judge Magdosa Malgar, also said in the ruling that political crimes are not terrorist acts. Your reaction to that?
We have always group here in the National Task Force that even the CCPNPA is still considered organized as a for the purpose of solving terror and still commits the acts of terrorism, mm-hmm. as murder and arson and other activities for the purpose of advancing their ultimate objective of overthrowing the duly constituted authorities, seizing control of the government, and impose totalitarian regime. And that's our firm belief here in the National Task Force, ELTA.
Mm-hmm. And because of that firm belief, are you one to prod the Justice Department to revive the bid to declare them as terrorist organizations? Go ahead.
Well, we will discuss this at the National Task Force, and whatever position that it's always a convergence of decision and ideas from the other members, especially the Department of Justice. So we will discuss this from this development.
General, what do you say to the observation that with this recent ruling, that this can be sort of a springboard for the resumption of peace talks?
I don't think so, because we have also laid out our policy when we established by the virtue of the Executive Order EO-70 that we will not anymore resort to a national peace talk, but we will engage in a localized peace engagement with the armed group at the local level. Mm. So we will always follow what we have started in the National Task Force since 2019, mm. When a National Task Force was established to end the local armed conflict.
Mm. But there's got to be a deeper understanding of why there is conflict to begin with. Let me just go back to a part of the decision of the Manila court wherein it said, under the foregoing, this court finds that the acts of the respondent organizations have been committed to achieve a political purpose and two, have been primarily directed at state agents and not against civilians, not having met the stringent requirements of HSA 20 of 2007, the 9 acts of atrocities committed by the NPA can only qualify as incidents of quote-unquote rebellion. Your thoughts on that?
We at the National Task Force, LCAP, has also our basis of classifying the Communists, the CCPNPA, NDF, and NPA as a terrorist group, based, of course, on two grounds, that the organization, association, or group of persons were organized for the purpose of engaging in terrorism. That's on our position. And that even if the organization or association of the group of persons was not organized to engage in terrorism, still they commit acts of terrorism, such as murder, actually, as I have already articulated mm-hmm. there.
But then how then will this decision impact your efforts in the NTF-LCAC? considering that you have this decision, saying that they're not terrorist organizations?
Well, we will just continue our efforts of raising high level of awareness to our community, to our vulnerable sector, to our youth, to our laborers, telling them of how this organization is, how deceptive is the organization in dealing with our political activity and even in our national activity.
But wouldn't that be putting more emphasis on what you want to believe over a court decision?
What we believe is also based on a legal position that we have in the National Task Force. This was even issued a proclamation order by the President way back in 2017, officially declaring the CCPNPA as a terrorist organization under Republic Act 10168, otherwise known as the Terrorist Financing Prevention and Suppression Act of 2012.
Mm. Let me just end this conversation now with Bayan Muna Secretary, or Bayan Secretary General Renato Reyes said regarding this decision, he said, they also pointed out that the judge's ruling, which stated rebellion is rooted in a discontent of the existing order, which is perceived to be unjust and equitable to the majority. That you should be, in so many words, focusing on this, going to the root of the problem and trying to solve this, to end the insurgency. What do you say to that, General?
Yeah, that's the very essence and purpose of why the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict was created and established, and to address social injustices and deliver the socioeconomic programs of the government to the completely affected and vulnerable communities. So to bring in the development outcomes that this community are the primary issues and secondary issues that are present in the local, in these communities.
Mm. And if that is your goal, how can labeling them as terrorists help achieve that goal?
Actually, right now we're focusing on providing the necessary services, basic services, infrastructure development. Once these areas are cleared from local armed conflict and terrorist activities. So we are in harmony with other agencies to address what they call injustices and discontent, so to speak, by the communist terrorist group.
Retired Lieutenant General Emmanuel Salamat, their Executive Director of the NTF-LCAC. Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming to the show. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Pramina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.